Perhaps you've heard a conversation about Section 702. Maybe you heard that it's a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights, or it's taking the constitutional protections and stripping you of them. Maybe you've heard that the members of Congress and our Senate and our President has failed you. Well, it's all sensationalized, right? There's nothing to worry about. Well, I'm not so sure about that, which is why I decided to use my resources here on the America Out Loud News Network and reach out to our constitutional scholar himself, Mr. Paul Engel, the founder of Constitution Study. I'm going to be co-hosting this episode today so we can go into the thick of it, find out what has Paul learned when he started doing his research into it, as well as, are these concerns sensationalized, or should we really be concerned? Sit back, grab yourself a cup of coffee or whatever it is that you're into. You're watching and listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden and Paul Engel. Let's get emboldened.
America Emboldened.
Great, I feel emboldened.
You don't know the founding fathers. You don't know what they did. You don't know what they sacrificed. We have lost touch with the principles in the Constitution. Nobody's read the Declaration of Independence. You are voting for socialism. And you got what you voted for.
All right. Welcome, bold Americans, to yet another episode of America Emboldened. As always, I'm your host, Greg Bolden, both here on the America Out Loud Network, as well as all those social media links, as well as our Patreon page, patreon.com/AmericaEmboldened. Make sure you go over and check out AmericaOutLoud.news, where you can check out all my colleagues' work, people like my co-host today, Paul Engel, the host of The Constitution Study, a show that you should not miss if you care about the rights that are supposed to be protected by the individuals that you elect, the Congress and Senate, as well as all of your local state officials and those that take an oath to it. So without further ado, let's bring them right up to the stage. Paul Engel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Greg. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm having a great day here. The sun has been shining. It was beautiful in my car ride home to get ready to record this with you, and looking forward to a great conversation.
Yeah, so am I. You know, it's funny. I was just out a little while ago. I went up to get the mail, nice little walk, and just sunshine. I got the cows are out. Life is good.
Absolutely. Sometimes when we reconnect with nature a little bit, it helps us just ground ourselves and go, you know, all these headlines with people trying to scare us, what's happening? You know, maybe we can just relax and enjoy the fact that we're breathing, we're alive, and we're enjoying the earth that we're on. So, perspective.
Absolutely.
All right. So, Paul, I tagged you last week in a post by Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden put out this thing on X that basically said that the government was about to shred our constitutional rights of the Fourth Amendment. In fact, for those that are watching this, I'm going to put that up on the screen so you can see it exactly, and I'm not just talking about it. All right, here it is. So Edward Snowden says, whoa, the White House is calling the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution a threat to national security. This is a real memo sent out today. The yellow highlighted sections just translate euphemism, the Biggs Amendment, to plain language. Biggs warrant requirement, sources below in the quote tweet. And so I tagged you in this because I know that you'll go and read the text of all the bills. You're not just going to take a document that somebody posts on X and say, oh my God, the sky is falling. And I'm glad that you did, because you wrote back to me and you said, I dug into this. I have details. And, you know, I said, well, let's talk. Let's make this happen. So I'm curious. You dig in. What have you found?
My dog's barking.
Sometimes it's my dog.
The Amazon guy showed up and then that gets the dog excited. So what I found out, it actually was interesting, because you're right. I always try to trust but verify. And here's the interesting thing. So Mr. Snowden was actually retweeting a document from Ms. Hayden, I believe. And here's the interesting thing. I could not find a link to that alleged memo. And I say alleged, not because I disparage them. I don't have proof of that actual memo. I searched. I could not find that language anywhere. What I did find, though, was an actual policy statement from the Office of Management and Budget that said pretty much the same thing. Not exactly the same thing, not the exact words, but the same sentiment that requiring a warrant is just it's a threat to our national security. We're all going to die if we actually require government to get a warrant before they go searching through our stuff.
And God forbid we ask government to do the right things to protect your privacy, you know, and uphold the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. Can you remind people maybe what is the Fourth Amendment? Why do I keep saying that? I know you know.
So, yeah, the Fourth Amendment starts out that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects shall not be infringed. So you have this whole idea of you have a it's often referred to as a right to privacy. That's not true. There's the concept of privacy is in there, right? But it's government cannot search without a good reason, which generally means a warrant based on probable cause supported by oath or affirmation as required by the Fourth Amendment, or what's called an exigent or an urgent circumstance, right? So if a police officer pulls up to your front door, there's smoke billowing out, there's flames coming out of the roof, and they hear someone inside screaming, help, help. They don't need to go, sorry, we have to go get a warrant before we can come in and help you.
Right.
That's obviously one of the extreme examples. The more common example is if they're chasing a felon and that felon runs into your backyard, they can follow you. It's considered an exigent circumstance, and whatever they see, they can then use against you. It's one of the reasons why most attorneys I talk to say you don't let law enforcement into your house unless they have a warrant. But that's a whole other scenario. That's
right. Yeah.
Topic for another day.
So I guess, you know, let's take people through a little bit of history here, and correct me if I'm wrong in any of this. I'm not sure how much in your research you tried to figure out, but I thought maybe a good use of our time as we dive into what you found is to tell people, where did FISA even come from and why was it needed? And when I was researching to just make sure I had it, it looks like it originated back in 1978. And the reason for it was to establish a procedure at the time to collect foreign intelligence information for the United States. And it created a special court known as the FISC, the FISC, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And it was supposed to oversee requests for surveillance warrants just in national security cases. The reason why they enacted this was in the 1960s and the 1970s, there was various government programs that were targeting political activists. They were targeting civil rights leaders and people that were seen as dissenting towards government. There was the FBI's COINTELPRO program, which was targeting domestic groups here in the United States, perceived as being subversive to our safety. And the revelations of that raised concerns. And so they said, you know, this is a government overreach. It's going to have violations of your civil liberties. And so that was one of the parts. There's also church investigations. I'm kind of curious. Is that kind of your knowledge of where this began and where the first start of the courts, or am I missing some pieces?
So, yeah, the original FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, was created in response to the Church Committee. And remember, at that time, we're in the middle of the Cold War. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have electronic intelligence becoming more and more, you're just starting. I mean, 78, you know, there were no personal computers. Computers were large things that took up whole rooms and had all sorts of acolytes keeping track of them. You know, it was much different standard or showcase. But what they were concerned of is we've got this stuff going on that we need to know about. How do we collect that data? And you're right. It was targeted at foreign surveillance. You know, what are we dealing with? We were still dealing with Cuba. We were dealing with the aftermath of Vietnam. You still had Cambodia. You had all these things. How do we collect the data? Now, there's a distinction in there, because what was actually renewed is Section 702. After 9/11 and those attacks, we had the Patriot Act, which said we're going to add Section 702, which basically says we had an intelligence failure. Right, the people that are supposed to collect intelligence had no clue what was going on. Of course, in hindsight, everything's 20/20, but we said we've got to do something. So here's a tool where you can collect this new wonderful source of data called electronic intelligence. right? Where you can go out and you can gather all emails and chats and websites and gather all the vacuum up all this data and put it in a database. And the logic being is once we've gathered this data, you know, we know, you know, this person is a person of suspicion. So we're going to start collecting their data. They're not U.S. citizens. They're not within the U.S. Therefore, the Constitution is not law and it's considered legal, right? May violate some international treaties. Not so sure, but that was a general idea. Now, there's a couple problems that came out of that. Problem number one is, well, if I'm talking to person X and person X is having all their data collected, well, that means you're also collecting some of my data.
Correct.
Right? If I'm emailing with this person, they now know there's this other person they're communicating. Now, we could be sharing recipes for cookies. Doesn't matter. They can collect it. That got expanded to say, not only can we collect the communication you're having with the target person, but because you're in communication with the target, we can now collect your data.
Right.
Which is where we start bringing in potentially and frequently U.S. citizens, U.S. residents, what is referred to in the law as a U.S. person. Now, that data is supposed to be, they call it minimized, right? Redacted. So that you're person X. So you are sharing cookie recipes with Osama bin Baker in the middle of Iraq. But because you're sharing, now your emails are being collected. They're collecting your data, but it's listed as U.S. person X, not Greg Bolden.
Right.
But that data still in the data. So what the FBI would do is they would do what's called a U.S. person query. We are looking for information on U.S. person X. We saw an email. We all know that chocolate chip cookies is a code for a bombing. So we want to search U.S. person for communicating U.S. person X to see if this is really a dog whistle or not. And that's where the problem starts. See, they had this thing called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. They could request a warrant from that court outside of the normal legal proceedings, right? And the FBI had all sorts of rules. They had to go through the same basic process of a warrant. You know, they had to have an affidavit, but it was, we'll call it less supervised.
Okay.
Right? That was found to be abused, right? That was found we had the FBI lied under oath on their affidavits for FISA warrants. They lied to the court. This has been documented. Uh-huh. They used those to get warrants to search Donald Trump and his campaign. They renewed that warrant so they could search not only Donald Trump, but his administration. Mm-hmm. All right. A congressional committee found 278,000 instances where the FBI searched the 702 database without a warrant. They searched for contributors to political campaigns. They searched for people in demonstrations, everything from Black Lives Matter to January 6th. Yep. So the FBI took what was meant to be a tool to protect us and then turned it into a tool to spy on us. And that Section 702 was set to expire on April 19th of this year. And of course, that's when the brouhaha popped up, because what do you mean you're going to take away our right to spy on the American people?
Right. It isn't amazing that on April 9th, they introduced this bill. And, you know, with all the inefficiency at this in time that's going on in the world, you know, they're able to get Laurel Lee sponsor and status through. And then by April 20th, it's enacted and signed by the president. And we have here the full 33 pages of text that you and I have both gone through. It amazes me that Congress can easily work together in order to make something happen when it is something that is attacking our personal rights. But yet when it's a financial issue, we got to threaten, oh my God, we're going to shut down government. Where was the talk of maybe we shut this program down and have good debate about it for a few weeks, that what's it going to matter if we go a few weeks without a 702 renewal? Are we in that much danger if this thing all of a sudden is suspended for a brief amount of time?
Well, you have to understand, Congress has learned that they can govern by crisis. Mm-hmm. All right. So it wasn't like somebody was sitting around going, you know, on April 7th, oh my God, we forgot 702 is going to expire. They've known about this for years. And people have been talking about modifying or repealing 702 basically since, you know, 2020. Actually, probably since 2016. So this is nothing new. This is no surprise. These were, you know, we're going to govern by crisis, and let's make it a crisis so that we can rush it through without being looked at. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting is I look at this legislation, H.R. 7888, and we're told that, see, we're fixing the problem. Well, see, one of the things I saw was, according to the law, in order for an FBI agent to gain access to do a U.S. person query of the 702 database, they needed to go through so much work. They needed to get approval from a supervisor.
Right.
Or they needed to get approval from an attorney that had access to the unredacted data.
Right.
That's it. The very same FBI that's abused this in the past, the very same FBI caught spying on political candidates, political campaigns, political groups, Roman Catholics, parents that complain about schools, that very same FBI, all you need to do is ask a supervisor, which is, not only makes it unconstitutional, which means those 278,000 times the FBI searched without a warrant, those are actual federal crimes. It wasn't simply unconstitutional. Those are actual legitimate federal crimes, each one punishable by a fine and up to 1 year in jail.
So we saw with Matt Taibbi in the Twitter files, right? We saw these inquiries, so to speak, the way the FBI was contacting the former leadership at Twitter, which is now X. Mm-hmm. And they were very clear with, like, hey, we would like to get more information on this account, or if you could throttle this one and take this one down. And it sounded like, from what I'm hearing from you, the ability to get somebody under a 702 is as easy as an email to a supervisor and a supervisor sending back, yep, that sounds good. Go look into Greg Bolton. Go look into Paul Engel. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. Now, granted, what Matt Taibbi did with the Twitter files dealt with a private company and their illegal relationship the federal government had in pressuring that company to do things. This is data housed by the FBI.
Right.
This is the FBI's database. And you're right. All it is an email. Hey, George, can I do this search? Sure, go ahead. And that's what the law requires. So we had a representative, Andy Biggs, said, I have an amendment. The amendment's real simple. If you're going to do a U.S. person query, you need to have a warrant, or there were certain exigent circumstances, like if there was an imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury, or what he referred to as a cybersecurity threat signature. So, you know, if the idea is, gee, you know, we think there's an attack being planned on the president, we can logically tie to this person, we don't need to wait for a warrant. But if it's, you know, actually, so what's interesting is the current the language of 7888 said, oh, by the way, yeah, if there is a threat to life, but there's not a time frame, there's no imminency required, meaning under the current law, as was passed and signed, someone could claim that, there's a threat on, you know, where Greg works. And sure, we don't think they're going to be able to do it for 6 months, but let's search now without a warrant, just because I can claim there's a threat to where Greg works. It's the details that get you every time. So Mr. Biggs, Representative Biggs, submitted this amendment, and I read it going, it basically says, let's follow the Constitution. Let's follow the Fourth Amendment. You have to have a warrant, or you have to have an exigent circumstance, which generally, like I said, it's urgent. The one they added, which I thought was interesting, was a cybersecurity threat signature, which I would guess they're assuming urgency because you're talking about a cyber attack. But
right,
we're dealing with people who barely know how email works.
I mean, we've seen the Christopher Wray's just recently gone out the sheriffs and told everybody that we should be expecting a cyber attack, that it's imminent, that eventually this is going to be happening on our infrastructure. So that kind of makes sense as to why that would leak itself.
Well, you have to remember, even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Correct.
Yeah. If every day you say there's a threat coming, sooner or later, odds are you're going to be right.
Yeah, you're correct. I'm concerned about what this means for people like you and I. And the reason why I point this out, maybe not so much for you, more so much for me, because I know you're sticking more to the Constitution and you're not doing some of the more risque interviews that I sometimes find myself in. But for example, I interviewed a few years ago John Paul MacIsaac, who at the end of our conversation, we had a phone call and he said, I just want to make you aware that you should assume that the FBI is going to be listening into the rest of your conversations. So if you're talking to anybody that needs to make sure that they stay anonymous or they're working for the government, just make sure that they know that their phone call with you will not be secure since you're speaking with me. That was the first time that I've ever done podcasting and journalism that I was ever kind of shook in a sense of, I never realized that, you know, doing this line of work could actually put all of my communications in front of somebody. And I'm kind of thinking funny about it because I'm like, I send a lot of memes and jokes to my family and friends and having fun, and I'm very harmless. But at the same time, yes, I rely on people that are good friends that have good information, then I keep anonymous. And I had to tell people, hey, you know what? I don't know that you can share that information with me at this point in time or ever, because I don't know. So I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, here I am, a domestic journalist, a United States citizen all my life, talking to a fellow United States citizen who they tried to frame as somebody who was colluding with Russia and used 702 on him. What you're telling me is they actually made it easier now to also go after journalists to get information and endanger the very fabric of our democracy in order to have a free press. And so could this affect the First Amendment as well?
Well, first of all, my guess is you're being recorded already simply because you mentioned words like Constitution. Huh. You got to remember, I got kicked off of Facebook after I started teaching about what the Constitution says about how we elect the president. Right. I got kicked off of LinkedIn.
How horrible of you.
Oh, yeah. I quoted nothing but the Constitution and federal law. And that's what got, and that's the time frame I got kicked off of Facebook, because they'll never tell me exactly why they kicked me off. I got kicked off of LinkedIn several months later. I forget what I was talking about. So you use these phrases, they're getting vacuumed up. We live our lives in public. Now, by talking to that one gentleman, maybe you would get a little more attention, but my guess is most likely somebody was sucking up all that data anyway.
Right.
We have, in effect, as the American people, made a deal with the devil that said, for our own convenience, we will give up any sense of privacy. We think we have it. It doesn't really exist. If it goes along electrons and wires, someone is collecting it. Having spent 30 years in IT, I know how and where a lot of that collection happens.
Yeah.
And there are ways to get around it. They're very cumbersome and inconvenient, but most Americans don't think about that because we didn't spend 30 years in data centers dealing with large computer systems like this. The issue is there are plenty of attacks on our rights to freedom of speech and freedom of the press. I'm very particular about terms. Most of what people talk about as First Amendment rights or First Amendment protected rights are not actually protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution, because the First Amendment starts out with Congress shall make no law. Our right to freedom of speech and freedom of the press is more often protected by our state constitution, which is ignored about as often as the federal constitution. What you're dealing with here is the loss of the ability to have privacy. See, if we're having this conversation, yes, you're recording it for your program. Fine.
Right.
I also know that your provider is recording it because they have to have a copy for you when you ask for it.
Right.
And that most of the data is being recorded probably in several different places. We walk around with tracking devices on that tell the world where we are and what, you know, what we like to buy. And, you know, all of this is there. 702 is unique because it's the first time that I'm aware of where the government said, not only, listen, we're going to collect data on you and we're going to search it. And we don't really think we need a warrant because it makes our life difficult. It's the first time I saw, this was the actual, the actual memo I saw that said, requiring a warrant, actually having to prove we've got some reason to search, is just a task too far. They actually said that the problem is when we do these searches, we don't have enough data for a warrant yet. Paraphrasing, that's basically what they right. said. We can't get a warrant because we need to get to this data before we actually have any reason to get to the data to do this. We can't have probable cause because we haven't searched the data yet. It's this, we twisted the Fourth Amendment into this idea of privacy, and we allowed that to change how we look at all this data. And A, we forget that we generate a huge amount of digital exhaust that gets vacuumed up. But the very idea of this is my data, this is private information. We don't realize most of the data that people are searching is not actually data we created. A lot of it is data about us, which is the other part we think. It's one of the reasons why I support an amendment to the Constitution that would amend the Fourth Amendment to bring it into the digital age.
Oh, I like that.
Right. So that
actually reminds me, Paul, of a conversation that I had with you a while back where I said, do we need some type of digital rights bill to be written in modern times? And at the time, I don't know, we came up with a solution in that conversation, but I love adding that to the Fourth Amendment and amending. Maybe that is the solution, right? You don't need a digital bill of rights because you already have your rights, but amending the Fourth in order to give further protections. There's two areas where I've heard individuals specifically defend the use of this intrusiveness of government. And the two times that I heard it are in times of crisis. I heard it after September 11th, where people said after the Patriot Act was, an abhorrent document that was put upon us. But people said, you know, I have nothing to worry about. I do nothing wrong. The government can look at all my stuff. And I was going, it's a really interesting statement for you to make, because that's very trusting of your government to not use something against you in the future. And then I heard it again just about 4 years ago during the pandemic, where people were going, well, they can find out if I'm sick and have my medical records and have access to all this because I'm keeping, you know, people safe. What's my private medical records to anybody? I mean, it's everybody's right. They should know if the person down the street has measles or whatever. We are dangerously close to people explaining away why they don't need their rights. And with artificial intelligence, I think that that's going to be the breaking point. Maybe we can wrap the show up at the end with that one. But I'm curious, why are people constantly going, I'll give another inch, I'll give another foot? Are people not seeing what giving a foot is doing to their long-term future?
You know, it's funny. We've all seen the TV, you know, crime procedural, mm-hmm. where the cop asks the person to, hey, talk to me. You know, what do you have to hide? Let me search. What do you have to hide? And I keep thinking in my head, it's not what I have to hide. It's what I have to protect.
Yes.
Right. Benjamin Franklin said, they who would give up an essential liberty for temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. They don't deserve it. You know, if you're willing to give up your rights because someone else promises to take care of you, which is effectively the deal being made. You give up your privacy, we will keep you safe. Has that ever gone wrong in our recent history? You think about it.
Yes.
Think about that's repeatedly. Literally what you're doing is you are selling your soul. You are enslaving yourself to someone else. You're saying, I don't have the right to keep anything private. I'm not even going to bother keeping myself safe anymore. I've truly put myself, enslaved myself to this government entity mm-hmm. that I don't care how much you like the person that's wielding the power today. Sooner or later, someone you absolutely hate is going to wield that power. And if you are not willing to have your arch enemy wield that power against you, why should you want them to, your friend, to be able to wield that power against you?
That's beautifully stated. So I was just covering recently artificial intelligence, and I came across a revelation. And I'm going to run this by you because I think you're going to get show content out of this eventually. I know your mind's going to go into some crazy places on this one. But I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's a new ChatGPT Microsoft version of AI that allows you to put text to video. And the video that's coming out is beautiful cinematic quality that my trained eye with a degree in television and film cannot tell the difference of a drone shot of this Big Sur lighthouse being AI generated or an actual drone taking the footage. And I thought about this and, you know, just taking Hollywood, for example, which isn't my favorite, but you got $100 billion industry. If you have a bunch of people that can use this new software and they can just type in prompts, 20 people in a writer's team and create a movie, get the voices, you're putting a bunch of people out of work. We're hearing now, I'm an educator, right? I have parents and students that believe that doing the work is simply putting the prompt in the ChatGPT and letting it spit out the answers for you. That, well, I knew they asked the questions and I'm just doing research. Eventually, we're going to research ourselves out of existence. And so here was my thought. We've already given up personal property. We've already allowed the government to take over property in many ways. We've allowed the private corporations like BlackRock Financial to buy up property all over this country. We've allowed China to buy up farmland all over our country. There is one property left that we have rights to. And if this falls, we are so screwed. And that's our intellectual property. And our intellectual property, I believe, is what is under attack by AI. It's the fact that we may lose our soul of creativity, our soul of writing, of knowledge, and replace it with easy answers with a computer and a database making decisions. A world where perhaps there's a judge in the future that's not even a judge. It's AI that's going to read through the facts and render a case like Judge Dredd or the Minority Report and things coming down. But if you remove jobs for artificial intelligence, then you're removing finances. If you can't earn money, you can't buy property. You can't own property. Rights are derivative of property. And then I wonder, how does that make all races any different than what happened in Williamsburg, Virginia, when slave owners used their slaves to build the colony up, build the homes, and then they lived in the homes? Won't we be all enslaved to artificial intelligence? And what will that do to the Constitution? And I know you're going to have a ton of shows on that if you think about it.
Oh, you and I could do a lot of talking about that. I have a slightly different view of what you see. Again, I spent 30 years in IT. Mm-hmm. What most people refer to as artificial intelligence is not really artificial intelligence. Okay. It's imitation intelligence. What you described as the AI video rendering, the computer didn't come up with a brand new idea. It said, you're looking for information. It scoured the internet. It gathered the data. It assembled it based on an algorithm that had been developed by a person that mm-hmm. put in its own biases. So it's imitation intelligence. And okay, how does that impact our lives? Human nature is to be lazy. What we have the lesson we've never learned is when you make things more convenient, when you make them easier, when you don't put anything into it, you no longer have agency over it. Right? Decades ago, when I used to teach high school Sunday school, and I'd be dealing with teenagers, I would start off the school year always with one statement. I said, the most difficult question I will ask you in this class is why? Because I want to make sure that you came up with the answer. You're not simply regurgitating what somebody else said. That what you say you believe is actually your belief and not the echoing of what somebody told you. That's what we need to do today. Are you letting AI do it for you? Is it really your work of art, or is it you're just taking credit for some machine that somebody else developed? And as long as we can look at things and say, I'm okay with someone else doing the work. You know, we used to, when I was in school, the idea we were repeatedly told, the reason why you don't cheat is not because it's wrong. You don't cheat because the only person you're cheating is yourself.
Right.
If you can't figure out the answer, you've now lost that opportunity until either for the rest of your life mm-hmm. or until you come back to where you were before. So, you know, when it comes to dealing with AI, AI is what people call AI. These are all tools. But I see a lot of people using a lot of scaremongering to turn the tool into Skynet. To say that sooner or later, even though there's absolutely no scientific evidence of it actually being a possibility for a computer to become self-aware, we use it to scare people. Now, if I can say, per classic example, I recently got an intern here at the Constitution Study, a young lady, college student, who in her spare time helps around here. And one of the things she's been doing lately is doing my graphics. So I write an article, I send her the article, she creates a couple versions of graphics, we work it out, that goes onto the website. I could probably just as easily take that same text, pop it into an AI, and get something back. It might look pretty. It might be high res, high quality, wonderful shading, but it's missing something. And that something is that human spark that makes what my intern does, although it may not be technically as high quality, emotionally it's higher quality.
I agree with you there.
And that's, you know, we have to determine what is our value. And you're right, from the human nature of being lazy, I would just rather have somebody else do it. And we never stop to think, well, what are the consequences of that?
Correct.
Because you know, we saw it with the Industrial Revolution, when we went from an agricultural base to an industrial base, and we brought people in. And when we went from horse and buggies to automobiles, when we went from, you know, a mechanical world to a digital world, this is happening over. Artificial intelligence is merely the latest example of a labor-saving tool that will change our lives if we let it. The fact is, most people probably will.
And that's what I'm getting at. So in 2001, we have people saying, I got nothing to hide. In 2020, look at my medical records. In 2030, are they going to say, let it do my job? I'd rather be sitting at my house playing video games. You know, like, where is our society going? And that's where my concern is. Because Michael Benaric always taught me when I was reading through and speaking with him, it was, your rights are derivative from property. And I never thought about our intellectual property in those terms until thinking about it through the lens of artificial intelligence. And just as you said, if that intern's not making it, you can get somebody, but now you're missing the intelligence part that's also that intern's property and your property that you can't say it was sourced from millions of different places and came out looking a certain way. I'm just very concerned about where we're going as a whole. And that kind of leads to the final part for today. I'm not sure if you heard about this, but the reason why I was so glad that you pointed out in 702 in this document that I think this Claire or whatever, Carney, I think it was, Jordan Carney.
Yes.
You said, you know, I couldn't find it on letterhead or anything from there. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but just about 48 hours ago, Aaron Day, who was running for the Libertarian Presidential Party at one point in time, he since has dropped out, he posted a letter that was attributed to Elizabeth Warren. And it was on official letterhead. And it said that she was proposing that there would be a bill where they start taxing Bitcoin at 1% if you own over $500,000. And I immediately was like, well, that sounds like believable. It's Elizabeth Warren. But I went to her website. I went all over the internet and I could not find this document anywhere. And so I chose not to post it. And then about 2 hours later, it came out that this was a forged document. It possibly could have been artificial intelligence that somebody used in order to make it look nice.
It could have been Photoshop.
Could have been Photoshop. It could be anything. But the point is, we're living in this society right now where just because you saw it online doesn't mean it's true. The verify version of things is absolutely necessary. Do not believe something, ladies and gentlemen, bold Americans, constitutional studiers. Just make sure that you're knowing that it's verified from a quality source, coming straight from the source or there, because otherwise I believe half of what I see at this point in time, and I really don't believe anything that I hear, as the old saying goes. But yeah, thank you for doing the work the way that you're doing it, because it's very important. And I just want to tell people, you know, if you're not listening to the Constitution study, make sure you're doing so. If you're not going over to the website, Paul's website, it's great as well, where you can learn constitutionstudy.com. Paul's doing classes. Paul, what do you have going on right now that people can get involved with?
So the big thing, before I do that, I want to make, point out one thing. This is not a new problem. No. Thomas Jefferson once wrote nothing. I think it's 1790s. He wrote it. He said, nothing can now be believed which is seen in a newspaper. Truth itself becomes suspicious by being put in that polluted vehicle. Trust but verify has been around since mankind. And you're right. The hard part is, how do you determine when something is trusted? It's actually one of the things I talk about. So I have what I call my Patriots program. What I saw was a lot of different Patriot groups that, A, don't talk to each other, and B, I think, put together fairly not well-organized arguments, right? They may have a point, but it's not well-structured. It's not based on the Constitution. So I decided to create this thing called the Patriots Program. It's got three parts. I call it the scholars, the constitutional scholars, the committees of correspondence, and the Minutemen. So it starts out, it's invitation only. The only way to get an invitation is to go through the boot camp. So if you go to constitutionstudy.com/patriots, you can read about the program. You can read all that we're doing with the program. And then you can sign up and go to the boot camp. It's a 1 hour video. Now, I'm actually trying to do some more of these, maybe via Zoom or live or other things like that. But the boot camp talks about trust but verify. You know, how do you build a strong argument? One that when people attack it, it stands. Because I just had somebody on social media today tell me that something is true because they said so.
I wish that would work. My wife and I, you know.
Yeah. So once you go through the boot camp, the Patriots program, and it's still building, which is it's still in its infancy. We've got the constitutional scholars. These are people who want to learn more about the Constitution. We're doing studies. We're doing more in-depth studies. We're taking a topic and like maybe going a deep dive into it so that we can learn all that we can. We've got the committees of correspondence, which are how we can communicate. You know, I interact with several different Patriot groups that I know they don't talk to each other because it's not in my backyard, or they don't believe everything we do. And I want to have a system of communication that we can communicate and help each other. Even if you don't agree on, if we agree on something, let's work together on that. And let's figure out how to get around the censors when we do it. Oh. And then the third, and to me, most exciting and most important part is what I call the Minutemen. The men and women that have done the training, they're prepared so that if something happens, they can show up at a moment's notice and help. You know, I always hear at the last minute, there's this event that there's this group demonstrating in favor or against this bill. And I find out about like 2 days before it happens. wouldn't it be nice to have people that could do that, could show up and be there, that, you know, somebody contacts me and says, I'm having a problem. I'm filing this case. You know what? I've got a Minuteman, lives about an hour away, and I bet you they'd be able to help to put them in communication. I don't want to replace what people are doing. I want to help people assist. Do what they're doing.
That's awesome.
Probably the, yeah. And it's growing slowly, and I'm trying to offer, my biggest thing is time. I mean, if there were three of me, I don't think there'd be enough time to do what I want to do. But, you know, I'm trying to do more classes. I'm trying to create more content. I'd love to write about half a dozen more books. But right now, it's mostly been creating content for the radio program and for the website. The website is different. I do a weekly article and video there that's usually in-depth on a topic. Like I did the one on the 702 renewal. I did one on TikTok. I'm working on one now about Maine and they're joining the National Popular Vote Compact. You know, there's a lot of different content and I love answering questions. I have a whole section of the website, which is just me answering questions, asking questions, answering questions. And yeah, it keeps me busy, but I guess it keeps me out of trouble as well.
We all know need those things that keep us out of trouble. But I love what you are finding is you're finding actionable steps, right? You know, you and I can crack open a microphone and talk for hours on our shows with ease. I mean, that's what we do. And we're knowledgeable. We go through a ton of information and try to break it down for individuals. But a lot of times we could miss the actionable steps of, okay, well, you took the time and you spent 40 minutes with me. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to be upset about this or are you going to go do something? What you just laid out is an amazing plan. It makes me realize I need to get my act together on America Emboldened. I need action steps like you do. So good job, Paul. Weigh the lead in all that. I want to tell everybody else, not only can you go to www.constitutionstudy.com, but also give Paul a follow. If you're watching on the X format right now or you're listening on America Out Loud, go over to the X format and give Cyber Engel a follow. It's right there up on the screen, but it's Cyber, CyberEngel. Give him a follow. He's posting great content. He posts way more content than I post every single day. I don't have the hours of my day to get as much as you do. But, you know, you're a great resource, a treasured both friend of the show and friend of the network, colleague. And so I appreciate you making time for us to talk a bit of 702, maybe calm people down, also let them know what's going on. And when you get those action steps for what we're supposed to do about all this, you let me know and we'll get the Minutemen together on how we can push back.
You know, Greg, thank you for having me on. I love coming out and having these conversations. Yes, you know, there are things we can do. The thing I want to make sure everybody remembers, 702 was not somebody else's fault. The people that voted to renew 702 work for us. They're our employees. And it's time we start treating them like such.
We got elections coming up too.
Yep.
All right, Paul. Pleasure having you to the program. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, bold Americans, we hope that we honored your time well. You learned a few things along the way. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to Paul at Cyber Engel on X, or you can reach out to me at Real Greg Bolden through the America Out Loud News Network or through all your different social media networks. And as Paul said on a show just the other day as well, the best way that you can help spread the message to other people is by sharing the show. And so if you've watched this today, and you said, you know what, that was pretty helpful, then click the share button. It's as easy as a click. It costs you nothing and really not going to take much time. So hit the share, hit the like button. Make sure you spread it far and wide and help spread the message of liberty and the Constitution and of freedom above all. I'll be back on Friday to do the weekly recap with Chris Michaels from the network. We'll have a blast for that and hope that you all stay well. You've been watching or listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden and Paul Engel. Be bold, America.